Hello, spooky friends, and welcome to the Spooky Scotty Podcast, the podcast that explores all of the wonderfully wicked and wild things that go on in the state of Wisconsin. I'm your host, Grayson Schultz. You might be noticing some new things around the podcast. It's been a minute and the podcast took a break. Was dealing with some life stuff, as I'm sure we all have been doing during the pandemic. One of the things that I started doing, and I'm sure I've talked about this before, but I hate listening to my own voice, so I'm not going to go listen to past episodes. But one of the things that I started doing in January of 2020 is I started testosterone and started transitioning to being more masculine. And for a little bit here, it's been a little difficult for me to control the pitch and volume of my voice. And so I wanted to wait until that was a little bit better under control to be able to record new podcast episodes. Because I know I would probably lose it if I was listening to somebody crackling and going through puberty on a podcast. You will hear voice breaks. I am sure you will. But for the most part, things have evened out and my voice has gotten a lot deeper. Other things have happened too. I'm turning into Robin Williams all of a sudden with all the hair. It's been a pretty wild almost a year and a half here. And with that too, I've been using a new first name, Grayson. And needed to kind of reconfigure things to match all of that. So if you stay and listen to the outro, there's a new outro. It's basically the same script. I just changed my name. And a couple other things that I needed to take care of. And also, I'm working in public health right now. And as you can imagine, kind of a fun time. And by fun, I mean not really fun at all. An interesting time to be working in public health. And it's a little taxing. So, you know, with the pandemic, with people not listening to reason or science, and now with the CDC pulling stuff about not having to wear masks if you're fully vaccinated without explaining to people the risks, and that a vaccine does not necessarily mean you will not get COVID. It just means you might not die from it. Might not die from it. Anyway, I won't get on my soapbox there, but it's been a minute, and I'm really glad to be in a position to at least record a couple of episodes here and there over the summer at the very least. I am having top surgery in July. For those of you who are not familiar with gender-affirming surgeries, top surgery for those of us who are on testosterone and like transitioning to masculine or male appearance basically is getting rid of my womanly chest and turning it into something that I can like actually walk around outside with. So I'm very excited about that. But that also means that there might be another disruption in, you know, the timetable of releasing episodes around then. My goal is to try to maybe get ahead of that and record some more episodes, you know, before then and have them scheduled and ready to go. We'll see what happens. between work and the 5,000 other projects I do and, you know, spending time with my partner. Which brings up another thing. I may not actually be living in Wisconsin a whole lot longer. I started dating somebody last year who lives in Ohio, of all places, and we are in talks, like it's some sort of negotiation, we're talking about moving in together, which would be me moving there. So, you know, the podcast may change a little bit, may not be as focused on Wisconsin specifically. We'll see what happens with it. But my goal is to keep the podcast going. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Everything's up in the air. And I'm really excited. This person is a pretty fantastic person, and I'm really very lucky and feel very affirmed and cared for and supported, and very loved, which is really nice. Really, really, really nice. I will stop talking about that because I don't want to get mushy on here. So, for this first episode back, I actually am doing an interview. What? I know. I sat down with Josh Armstrong, who is a filmmaker, to talk about his work and talk a little bit about why he is fundraising for an upcoming project. And I think it sounds really, really, really cool. So I'm going to throw you, I'm not going to throw you. Oh my God. I'm going to throw it to past me. I'm in a conversation with Josh. And then I'll talk to you a little bit more at the end. Okay. Hi, Josh. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. For people who don't know who you are, could you like tell them a little bit about the work that you do and the kind of the themes that you like to portray in your work?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So as you probably realized from my accent, I'm a London filmmaker in England, and at the moment I'm really driving to create, well, essentially redefine horror and science fiction to better portray mental illness. I think it's a theme which is so vital to talk about. I see it as really the next big pandemic, if not the current, you know, another current pandemic. But that's what I work towards. I'm a filmmaker who tries to make people not see the stigmas of mental health.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think something that's super important, especially like during the pandemic, right? I think a lot of people who may have had good coping mechanisms back in the old times, right? seems yes. forever ago. You know, are maybe now struggling with like isolation and how that might be bringing up depression or anxiety around things reopening or, you know, all of that. And so I think exactly. This is, you know, incredibly prescient, right? It's incredibly time sensitive stuff.
It is. Yeah. And if you look at the current situation, I think if you talk to most people below the age of 40, and even older than that, almost everybody says they've experienced some form of mental illness mm-hmm. or really struggled with their mental health. In Britain, we say, oh, you know, keep calm and carry on. I don't know if that's a popular phrase in Wisconsin, but I think that's not what you should do. I think we need to talk about it, because if we ignore it, it's just going to make the situation so much worse. And we need to look out for each other.
Yeah. And so much of that starts, right, with tearing down walls that are historically built, right? Whether yes. that's as we talk about systems of oppression and healthcare, or, you know, yeah. The ways
we don't have the problem with healthcare in the UK.
I know. Oh,
Do you guys just want to
Sorry.
like adopt me? Can I just
You're more than welcome to come by.
But like as we talk about ways that oppression shows up, right? Like I think it's very telling that a lot of people don't like to talk about their mental health, because it's one way that we've kind of self-reinforced this idea of like keep calm and carry on, right? Like if I don't talk about it, it's not there. I don't have to deal with it.
Exactly. And I think we're seeing the impact of that now, especially in the younger generations. I always try to incorporate these subjects in my films, whether it be horror, sci-fi, as I mentioned. But I think the important thing is, yeah, to just work towards creating that content, because you look at, say, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, right? A film made in the 1920s. And the depiction of mental illness in that is shocking. If you watch it now, it's really quite depressing. But even now with TV shows like American Horror Story, even then, the person with mental illness is often villainized. And really, they're the people who need the most help rather than the people they're supposedly chasing after and trying to swing a chainsaw at. We really need to push forward together in changing this representation in film as well, because it does make such a huge influence.
It really does. I have a friend who's visiting right now, who's dating my roommate, and they have schizophrenia. And one of the things that I think other people might have been concerned about them visiting is like, oh, schizophrenia is one of the quote unquote bad mental illnesses. Like,
Exactly.
you can't handle that. Like, what happens if they have an episode, whatever, right? And the reality of any mental health right issue is it's made so much scarier in the media, right? My friend definitely deals with hallucinations, but has also had, years of dealing with them and is on medication and knows how to cope with them in healthy ways. And like, it's one of those things where people often don't trust the person that has the mental illness to handle their own thing, right? Like they know their own body, they know their own mind, they know how things might be for them. It's important to kind of let them take ownership of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as well, it's interesting because if you look at Asia, people with schizophrenia are more likely to hear positive voices, and have positive hallucinations, whereas in the Western world, it's the opposite. They're often negative, which I think really helps drive home the message that there is a correlation between negative mental illness and negative influence. My friend passed away from heroin addiction a couple of years ago, and he had schizophrenia. And what I found, though, when I tell that story is that people just think, oh, he died from heroin addiction. Well, he went to heroin because of schizophrenia and because it was so difficult for him to find that support. So I keep drilling it home. It's so important to talk about it. And by the sounds of it, it's good that your friend has you and, they have somebody they can rely on.
I think it's been an interesting journey for me having them here. As somebody who talks a lot about mental health and like my own mental health, I think there was still as much as everybody tries to, practice what they preach, right? So to speak,
Sure.
I think because of media and like negative representation and stuff like that, there was still a part of me that was like, and you know,
that's a good description of it.
I don't know how I'm going to caption that, but it'll work. but you know, I think it's also one of those things of, if you don't know somebody who has one of those conditions that's so stigmatized, you're not going to talk to them. You're not going to like learn what it's like for them or the ways that they're able to cope or handle those things. Right. And so it's almost like this self-perpetuating cycle where, okay, we're not going to talk about it. Which means we don't know which people in our lives may have conditions, which means we don't know like the healthy ways people cope or, you know, anything that would destigmatize the conditions, which then leads to us not talking about it. And, you know, it's just like a cycle.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, what can you say? It's so important, I think, that we move forward in various different mediums to address the issue, because we don't want it to be until too late.
Right.
Especially with my friend, you know, I think the sad thing was when he passed away, it sadly just wasn't a surprise because we'd seen him go downhill so often. Mm-hmm. But if there wasn't this huge stigma against schizophrenia, maybe it would have, you know, worked out a little bit differently. Especially, you know, saying earlier that specifically in Western culture, schizophrenia does tend to involve negative hallucinations mm-hmm. and auditory hallucinations. Yeah.
Well, let's shift to talking a little bit about Shift, the short that you have that's on Amazon right now.
Yeah, so you can watch it free with Amazon Prime. So Shift is a supernatural ice rink thriller. That's how I always pitch it. It's a 10-minute little short, and we crowdfunded it with £2,500. In the US, I think that's like $3,500.
Something like that.
My math is terrible. I could make anything up. I don't know. but we made it with a very small amount of money for film. And it did really well in festivals. We really tried to explore if it was possible to create tension and suspense on a well-lit ice rink. And I think we definitely succeeded.
Yeah, I would agree.
Oh, okay, good.
Like, as someone who plays hockey, it was really fun to kind of see a different kind of tension, right? Like on ice. I'm a goalie, so I'm usually like getting to see like all of this different tension between the different players or players and myself, right? And it was really fun to be able to see this different kind of tension. And there's like a part of you that knows at the beginning that like something bad is going to happen, right? Like that's part of that tension. But like just the way that you guys crafted the story and the cinematography was really great. And I just also really enjoyed kind of that little last twist at the end.
Oh, good.
Like, did not see that coming at all. And then I was like, oh my God.
Well, I hope your listeners really enjoy this as well. It was a fun thing to to film, that's for sure. It was surprisingly, we only did it over 3 nights.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, 3 long nights. but there were certain restrictions in place, and at the end of the day, it all came down to finance. which is why we're working towards crowdfunding another project on a bigger and more, shall we say, vibrant scale.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about your new project?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Gosh, you'd think after all this time I'd be able to pitch it well. So, so essentially, it's a film exploring mental illness and drug addiction. And we follow the story of a drug addict who has a out of this world encounter with aliens. And the question is, how would society treat them? If a member of the public came up to you looking like they'd had a wild night out and they said to you, oh, I've just been abducted by aliens, would you stop and listen to them? Mm-hmm. Now, to do this sort of film, we've actually worked with the BAFTA-winning story writer of His House, which is a really great little horror film that explores some really important themes of our time. And we're working really to, as I mentioned earlier, sort of redefine horror, tackle stigmas of mental health. And what I like to do in my work is try to blur those lines of realism and surrealism. Can't even say it. Of realism and surrealism. Because I feel like that is, for me, what trying to get somebody to understand what mental health is like. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some great little projects out there, little Indiegogo, Scene and Spark. There's some great projects out there. There's one which is called Sagacity, which is, you know, explores like stigmas of mental disabilities combined with homophobia. Mm. And there are so many of these little projects that are going on, but in order for them to happen, we need support of fans. Because I think we can probably safely say that when you look at the film industry, they seem to just, you know, want to perpetuate this villainization of mental illness. And in order for us to stop that, we need to work together and try to support projects that go against that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I actually talked about the film much there. So we're crowdfunding a film called Apocryphal, which is a sci-fi horror. And it's a £34,000 goal, which I think is like $45,000. It changes every day. I can't keep up with it.
But
I think that's the conversion. And all of that goes to just creating this film. You know, I don't make any money from it. I'm putting my own money into it as well. We've all arranged to sleep head to toe in one-star hotels and eat cardboard food. You know, all of the money goes to creating this film because we feel it's such an important project to make.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, like the notion of, you know, kind of exploring if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I just had like an alien encounter, I was just abducted, right? I think it's such an interesting way to talk about like mental illness and addiction too, because oftentimes, you know, if people don't really believe in aliens or whatever, right? Like if somebody comes to you and is like, hey, this is a thing that just happened, there's automatically this dismissal of, oh, okay, like you were either inebriated, high, or you're crazy, right? Those are kind of the things that leap to people's minds immediately. And so I think it's an especially cool way to explore mental health and addiction because those things are so intertwined when it comes to alien abduction stories.
It really is. And, you know, I think, I don't know what I believe anymore, if I'm honest with you. If you'd asked me 3 years ago, do I believe aliens have visited Earth, I would say no. And now I just have no idea. I, you know, with the Pentagon have released all this video footage of UFOs. I just, and we've got this report coming out on June 1st. I just don't know what to believe anymore. And so that really does, as you said, just go hand in hand with mental illness. I don't know when to believe some people who have extreme mental illnesses. And that's really sad on my part. You know, I should be able to support them as much as possible, but I just feel there isn't enough of a foundation out there to for these people to get all of the support they need. One thing I found with my friend was sadly that we were giving so much support. Eventually it starts to consume your own life.
Yeah.
And it puts your own mental health down, and it's hard work. But if a foundation of support had been there from the start, perhaps he would still be with us. And, you know, that's a theme that we explore in the film as well, where these detectives, that's the main character we're speaking to, just look at him as if he's guilty of a crime, or that he's talking like he's a madman. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we really hope that it actually resonates with people and, you know, challenges their ideas of how to treat even people in the street who look like they need to talk to something.
Yeah, I really like that. I have had a few friends, you know, like the friend that's visiting us right now, who struggle a lot with their mental health, and it's, I mean, shoot, I do too, but like mine is always like super internalized, and nobody can tell there's anything wrong, right? Like, which I feel like there's stigma there too, but it's like a whole different world of stigma, right? And I think it's interesting that this seems to be like a relatively global thing, right? That portrayals in media aren't always as positive of mental health, and that there is some sort of stigma around whether it's talking about your own mental health or, you know, certain types of mental illness, especially like hallucinatory based ones. And like I you think were saying,
in America,
No, go ahead.
I think in America as well, it's so important. Mm-hmm. I know that people with mental illness, I think there are 8.3 million Americans who are openly saying that they're addicted to drugs, mm-hmm. and have mental illness. I mean, that's huge. That's absolutely massive. So, you know, I won't go into the politics of it all, but, you know, when you look at, say, gun crime in America, you know, we don't have shootings here in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously the people who are doing them have mental illness. And I think you have to beg the question, if a foundation had been there to support their mental health, would they have gone and done what they've done?
Mm-hmm.
Because no, you know, sane person would do those sorts of atrocities.
Yeah, I think
going deep there.
Yeah, it's good. Deep is good. I think there's also a lot to be said for like adverse childhood experiences, right? And I don't know if it's something that you know a ton about, but there's the Center for Disease Control here put together kind of, well, they didn't put it together, but they like highlighted it. It's from a study. And that there are a certain number of adverse childhood experiences that you can go through as you're growing up that also make you more statistically likely to develop not only like mental health issues, but substance use and addiction issues, issues around possibly like committing crimes, and living in kind of like continual poverty or having worse overall health outcomes and things like that. And you know, some of those things are actually like, one of them is living with a parent, guardian, or other adult that has undiagnosed and or untreated mental health issues, which I think is a really poignant thing.
Absolutely. Especially now that we're only really starting to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, my parents' generation was very much keep calm and carry on. Mm-hmm. And that did affect me, that attitude. So yeah, I think that's a really true thing to believe. But you know, for the film as well, we've tried to have as much of a diverse crew as possible.
Yeah.
In order to, you know, essentially make this film more poignant with as many people as possible. You know, we've got LGBT, we've got people from all various different ethnicities and different accents, you know, so I think it's so important to just try to speak to as many people as possible and work together for a common cause, whether it be in film or indeed ensuring that our children, the next generation, don't have this negative impression of being able to talk about things.
Yeah, it is really interesting. So I'm on TikTok because I have no life, and because there's a pandemic. And one of the things that I've found on TikTok is there are a lot of people, kind of millennial to like the younger generations, right, that are really doing a lot about talking around, hey, like, do these symptoms sound familiar? You might actually have ADHD that was never diagnosed, right? Because you grew up a girl or whatever. And so it's really cool to be able to see that kind of movement happening on social media platforms with some of the younger like crowd, and knowing that this is like the perfect time, right, to talk more about mental health, to talk more about like, how do we grapple with the different things that might keep somebody from getting diagnosed or treated? And, you know, I think it's just like the perfect time to work on this project.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something we've been working on for almost a year now in pre-production. I'm so passionate about it. Any support, you know, we could get, so appreciative. But even if people can't fund it, if they can share it, that just makes such a huge difference as well. But if people do want to go ahead and fund it, they can at apocmovie.com. That's apocmovie.com. And yeah, we really hope that you'll enjoy the content we have on there, and you feel that this is something, you know, you'd like to get involved with.
Super cool. I'm so excited for this project, and I know it will be fully funded. I'm just going to like bring that into the universe right now. Like,
thank you. Thank you. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Right. You know what? I think we have such amazing cast and crew, and it's such an important theme that, you know, I think we can do this, but we all need to work together to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your work. Super excited to be able to share this with other people. Is there anything else that you want to say to anybody who might be listening before I turn off the recording?
Gosh. So just so people know, I actually also work in a COVID lab. Ooh. And I just want, you know, people to know, you know, just stay safe, keep sanitizing your hands, wear your masks, just ultimately look out for each other, because it's so important to speak to people who need help right now. So keep going. Pandemic will be over. We can get through it, but we can only get through it together.
I think it's so important for us to think about what that means, right? Josh's parting words with us there. It is really telling that so much of the world kind of focuses in on this individuality aspect, especially here in the States, right? We're all for one and one for themselves, right? It's got nothing to do with community. Capitalism doesn't really set things up that way, right? And there are a million things I could say about capitalism and why I hate it, but I think one of the key features of it is that removal of community, of communal thinking, of communal action. And I think that's part of why during COVID times, we've seen such a big boom of people engaging in mutual aid work. That's been something that I've actually been doing a lot of in the last couple months. You know, giving things like an old bed away and helping people get stuff set up in their new places and moving things, and doing other things that are really helpful to individuals, right? But also to our communities. And I would just encourage you, if you have the ability and the means to do that, if you have something that you are really good at or you really like to do that can be turned into something that helps another person, right? Whether it's fixing up a computer or being some muscle to move some stuff around, or doing a grocery run for the community fridge or something like that, that you spend time and take time to do that, I think is really important. And I would say, especially as we start thinking more about what does community look like, right? I know here in Madison, we are pushing more and more towards less police presence, and we're not the only city doing that by any means. But if we were to have an end to policing as we know it, what would justice look like, right? Like, what would our justice system look like? What would there have to be set up from a community standpoint for that to work? And I think this is a really great first step for a lot of people to think about, you know, stepping in and helping other people when you have the means and ability to do it. I also really want to point out another thing that Josh and I talked about ableism, right? Is essentially what we were talking about, and the different ways that it ingrains itself into representation. And I know I've talked about ableism before, but there are, you know, a couple of different kinds of ableism. And one of the things I want to call out specifically is sanism, which is ableism geared at people with mental health conditions, substance use disorder, intellectual disabilities, things like that. And I think it's just really important to call that out we see a lot of movies where killers are, you know, mentally unfit or deranged or unhinged. And the reality is that that's not who generally commits crimes, right? Like, my mental health actually makes me more likely to be a victim. With some health conditions, it can be up to 10 times more likely to be a victim than a perpetrator of a crime. And that's especially true for people who have some of the more quote unquote severe, you know, kinds of mental health issues like schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder. And it's especially true if you are a woman, right? Or a racial or ethnic minority. And the other different identities that you might hold really impact your likelihood of being a victim, right? I also want to share a definition of ableism for those of you who might not know what it is. Like I said, I'm sure we've talked about it before on here, but I specifically wanted to use a working definition by Talia Lewis, who has been helped in coming up with this definition by other disabled Black and negatively racialized folk, including Dustin Gibson. And so ableism is a noun, and it is a system that places value on people's bodies and minds based on societally constructed ideas of normalcy, intelligence, excellence, and productivity. These constructed ideas are deeply rooted in anti-Blackness, eugenics, colonialism, and capitalism. This form of systemic oppression leads to people and society determining who is valuable and worthy based on a person's appearance and/or their ability to satisfactorily produce, reproduce, excel, and quote-unquote behave. You do not have to be disabled to experience ableism. And one way I'd like to point out, you know, because we do talk about ableism a lot in work that I do. And one thing I want to point out about the fact that you don't have to be disabled to experience ableism is, you know, we saw a lot of discussion over the last 4 or 5 years about Donald Trump and his mental health, or his overall health. And there are a lot of people who would cite things like he's crazy, he's unhinged, etc. Now, we don't know, right? Like, if he has a mental health issue, if he has other health issues, we don't know that. And frankly, it's not our business to know. I hate the man. I hope he burns in hell. But, like, from a very basic human standpoint, it's nobody's business. And there have been presidents who have had mental health issues before. Lincoln had horrible depression, and other presidents have had other health issues, right? Like, having a mental illness or any health issue does not preclude you from being a public official or even president, right? The issue here is that people are connecting possible illnesses to reasons why Trump did or said or put into place XYZ. And when you do that, not only are you kind of excusing his actions, you're actually like harming the disability community as a whole, right? Like, the American Psychological Association says, like, nobody can armchair diagnose. Like, even the best of the best psychologists and therapists are not allowed to armchair diagnose. Like, they can get in trouble, reprimanded, and possibly lose their license for that. So if they can't do it, nobody really should be doing it. and, you know, we don't know, again, to kind of go back to my main point, right? We don't know if Trump has a mental health issue or not. And acting as though he does often exposes him to be on the receiving end of ableism. Not that he pays attention to that, but, like, people act and speak in ways about him that are full of ableist rhetoric and harm. And again, that really doesn't do anything to Trump. It doesn't really do anything to his supporters. What it does is tell the disabled people in your life that you don't care about us. Because if you did, you wouldn't be resorting to that kind of conversation, that kind of language, right? And that system of oppression, right? And I'm going to put some links in the show notes about things like ableist language that we can work on unpacking, and this stigma around, you know, villains being disabled, whether it's the villain in Ant-Man and the Wasp, or, you know, gosh, all that's coming up are Marvel movies right now. Like, any superhero villain, for the most part, has either gone through some sort of major trauma or is somehow disabled, and that's why they're awful. Instead of, like, I don't know, people just choosing to be evil. I get that it's not as fun from a storyline perspective, but it really is really nice to, like, it would be really nice to, like, watch a movie where somebody sucks and it has nothing to do with their mental state. They just suck as a person. Right? I've gotten off on a tangent, but I'll put some links in the show notes about those kinds of things and some of the stuff that Josh and I talked about, like the Pentagon footage of aliens, or adverse childhood experiences, social determinants of health, resources for if you are struggling right now with your mental health. And then also the link to the fundraiser for the film Apocryphal. I can speak sometimes. That Josh is working on, which that URL again, and I'll put it in the show notes, is apocmovie.com. Okay, I think I have rambled enough at you. thank you so much for listening. I really can't say enough. During this time that I was taking a break, it was really something to get notes from people asking when there would be new episodes, have people check in on me, see how many people were listening to these other episodes that are already up. And it was just really cool, and really made me want to come back to this, you know, sooner rather than later. And I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you. One final thing too, is I've been streaming on Twitch. So Twitch, for those of you who don't know, is a website mostly for gamers to, like, play games while other people can watch. And there are all sorts of different interactive things you can do. Some people do podcasts on there. So, you know, doing a live episode might be something that we do. Things like that, where people can chime in the chat. And you can kind of have real-time interaction with somebody. I've been playing Resident Evil 8, so Resident Evil Village. And it's been really fun to do that and stream it. So I'm going to do more of that. And specifically around horror-themed games. So Dead by Daylight, Plague, you know, those kinds of things. Subnautica, which isn't as much horror, but is very puzzly, which I can appreciate a lot about too. So, you know, if that's something that you're interested in, I'll put that link in the show notes too, and you can come hang out and watch me stream games, or, you know, talk about spooky things live. I'd like to start doing more of that kind of interactive stuff with y'all. So it would be really fun. really fun. And okay, now I think I've actually yammered at you enough. But please, please, please don't forget to check the show notes for all these links and other information that I'll put in there. And if you don't know where to find the show notes, it's spookyscani.podbean.com. And again, that link will be, I think, in like the main thing on the podcast. So you should be able to see it anyway. I don't know. It's been a minute since I looked at this stuff. But without any further ridiculous ado, take care of yourselves. Please continue to wear your mask. Please continue to take steps to protect yourself and your family and other people you care about, people around you and in your community. This pandemic is not over, and it's not going to be over if we start eliminating masks now, by any means. So take care of yourselves, and I will talk to you next time. You just listened to the Spooky Scotty podcast. It's produced every so often by me, Grayson Schultz. The intro outro music is from Purple Plant. You can find show notes, a rough transcript, and more over at spookyscani.podbean.com. While you're here, take a minute to rate and subscribe if you can. You'll help more people see the show by rating, and you won't miss a single episode if you subscribe. And that's pretty dope. Feel free to reach out with feedback, spooky stories, or episode suggestions at spookyscannypodcast@gmail.com. In the meantime, sleep tight and don't let the badgers bite.